Welcome to the latest edition of the Freshfields podcast. This is part of our global investigations series. My name is Caroline Stroud. I am in the People and Reward Group at Freshfields and I'm based in London. And today I'm joined by Boris Seder, also a partner in our People and Reward practice based in Hamburg in Germany, and Laura Chapman, a counsel in our People and Reward practice based in Singapore. Hello.
Hello.
So whistleblower protection is a hot topic. Everybody knows that there have been some very high profile recent scandals reported in the press where issues in businesses have been raised by whistleblowers. We now have, from the 16th of April this year, the European Parliament adopting a whistleblower protection directive, which aims at better protecting people reporting on breaches of European law. At the moment, only 10 EU countries provide comprehensive legal protection for whistleblowers. And what that means is it's likely that the European directive will require quite a lot of change in Europe in the different jurisdictions in order to satisfy the requirements. I wanted to ask you, Boris, how significant you saw this development?
I think this European directive will have a particular impact on countries such as Germany, where so far the protection of whistleblower has not been very good. Until very recently, employers were allowed to dismiss whistleblowers if they reported misconduct to the authorities, for example. And so I think that the introduction of this European directive will significantly improve the protection of whistleblowers in many European countries.
I wanted to ask Laura whether something similar is being pushed forward in Asia.
Well, there's certainly not a regional approach in Asia. It remains very much up to each of the individual countries to enact their own regulations or laws in relation to whistleblowing as they see fit. But having said that, we are seeing quite a significant increase in countries which are adopting new protections for whistleblowers. So at the moment, for example, we have China, India, Japan and South Korea all have specific laws that provide protections to whistleblowers. And in fact, Australia has just enacted new legislation to provide further protection to whistleblowers, which will come into force in July this year.
So the European directive introduces what are called common minimum standards to protect people working in the private or public sector from retaliation if they report breaches of EU policy law. And the sort of areas covered include things like public procurement, financial services, safety law, environmental law, public health, etc. Is that the kind of protection which is offered in Asia to people who raise issues in similar areas?
In some places it is, and I think there is a wide spectrum from places like Singapore where there's no specific legislation which protects whistleblowers up to, as I say, Australia probably is now leading the way in relation to having comprehensive whistleblower protection. I think one area where we're seeing a much more consistent approach is in financial services sector, where the financial regulators are starting to really encourage individual authorised institutions to put in place quite robust whistleblowing processes and with those protections.
So the European directive has a fairly narrow area of complaints which are covered. But what is interesting, Boris, is that the definition of people who are actually protected is very broad.
It is. And I could imagine that when the local legislators implement them into local law, that they may consider to extend the scope so that when it becomes local legislation, that the scope is much broader than the scope of the European directive, and so that the whistleblower protection in many countries will go beyond what is the area of application of the directive.
And one of the other topics which is very interesting around protection of whistleblowers is obviously their identity. And is it possible, for example, to keep the identity of a whistleblower secret? The European directive suggests that a whistleblower's identity should be kept confidential, but there's no mandatory obligation to keep that completely anonymous. And in Asia, Laura, are there different approaches to whether or not the anonymity of a whistleblower is preserved?
For the most part, the Asian regulations allow anonymous whistleblowing, and they will encourage the confidentiality of the identity of the whistleblower. And in fact, in the Australian legislation that comes into force this July, they've specifically removed any reference to the fact that the whistleblower has to identify themselves. So in fact, we believe that in Australia, again, anonymous whistleblowing will actually be encouraged.
So we've looked at the type of complaint that's covered by the European directive. We've looked at who is covered. But what kind of businesses will have to comply with the directive?
So companies that are in scope of the directives are in particular companies with 50 or more employees, and they must establish an internal whistleblowing system. And they also have to comply with the obligation resulting from the directive that they shall not retaliate against whistleblowers. And that may also have an impact on employment law, because this prohibition of retaliation may prohibit, for example, dismissals or other sanctions, disciplinary actions against whistleblowers after they reported misconduct to either the employer or to external authorities.
And I think whistleblowers under the European directive will be protected as long as they had reasonable grounds to believe that the information they reported on was true. Laura, is that the same in Asia as well?
It's similar. So to the extent we have regulations that set this out, I think generally it will talk about a kind of process-driven protection. So essentially, if they satisfy certain procedure requirements in the body or authority to which they report the concern or wrongdoing, and as you say, it must be a good faith report, so they must believe the information to be true. I think that's right. But I think the majority of jurisdictions where there is some sort of whistleblowing protection, they actually put it on the individual company or the organisation to implement their own whistleblowing policies that have, you know, what they term as adequate protection. So essentially it's up to the organisation to then decide what that means for themselves.
So maybe before we address what the directive requires these businesses to do and what perhaps is required in Asia, it's interesting to look at the approach that the directive has taken, which essentially is a tiered approach. So internal reporting is encouraged. The next level is reporting to the authorities or the regulator. And then the third level is reporting to the public or the media. And I know that when the directive was going through the European Parliament, there was a lot of debate about whether or not that tiering should be mandatory. So there was an obligation to go internally first. Only if that didn't work, you went to the regulator. And then thirdly, if that didn't work, you went to the media. And so either of you, Laura or Boris, why would it be a good idea for businesses to encourage internal reporting first?
Well, I think from the perspective we've seen is that if you can encourage your employees to report internally, then you do maintain a certain level of control over the way in which those concerns are investigated and ultimately reported to a regulator. But as another reason, of course, as well, it means that you can effectively monitor your speak up culture in a lot of ways to make sure that if there are issues, people are feeling able to speak up so that you can then again investigate that and take remediation steps.
So say the whistleblower falls within all these categories, Boris, and is protected. What are they protected from?
My view is that measures that would be prohibited include, for example, suspension, dismissal, transfer to another position, negative appraisal, intimidation, unequal treatment. For example, non-renewal of fixed-term contracts, which may be an issue in countries where there are rather liberal rules on fixed-term contracts, because this could now be a way for employees to achieve an extension or renewal of such contract by arguing that they were whistleblowers and only because they reported misconduct, they do not get an extension. And so that could be used as a way to get into an unlimited employment contract.
So given that in Europe there's a very strong movement to bring in these protections, the timing of the implementation of the directive is obviously going to be quite important for those countries where there's absolutely no protection at the moment, such as Germany. Boris, I think the directive has to be implemented by 2021. And in Germany, is that going to be difficult for businesses to comply with, to put these internal reporting mandatory measures into place to make sure that people are educated, to prevent managers retaliating against people who raise concerns, to establish a position on anonymity or confidentiality? Is that going to be a huge cultural change for German employers?
I think German subsidiaries of multinational companies are doing it already. However, it may have an impact on mid-sized companies or on smaller businesses, which currently do not have any reporting lines in place. And for them, it will be a significant change.
One of the developments that we've certainly seen in the financial sector and in the United Kingdom in respect to whistleblowing is an emphasis on the responsibility for the governance and the transparency and the efficacy of whistleblowing procedures to be dealt with at the very highest level in the company. So in the UK, we have our corporate governance code, which now places the responsibility for monitoring whistleblowing procedures and ensuring that people can speak up on the board. And then in the financial sector, we have a very prescriptive regime obliging financial institutions to put into place certain whistleblowing procedures, combined with an extremely wide definition of what whistleblowing is, far, far wider than the European directive.
We are seeing similar trends in Asia, probably not to the same degree as it has been in the UK. What we have seen, and I think probably best illustrated by way of an example, is in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, so one of the regulators there, put out in 2017 some guidance on culture reform. And as part of the culture reform, one of the mechanisms which they're requiring authorised institutions to have under that was a whistleblowing mechanism. And that's the first time there was a positive obligation on financial institutions to put in place a whistleblowing mechanism and to establish those sorts of protections. Again, we've seen it in China as well, when the banking, insurance and security regulators have issued various guidelines.
One of the very interesting topics around whistleblowing is whether or not you should pay people to whistleblow. The European directive does not prescribe that the EU countries have to put in place a reward regime. And in fact, reward regimes are fairly rare throughout the world, other than there are some very significant ones, such as the SEC's whistleblowing regime. And I believe, Laura, some of the regulators in Asia also offer rewards for whistleblowing. And those rewards can be very, very substantial because they're calculated as a percentage of any fine against the institution which might eventually be levied. So, Boris, do you think rewards and paying people for whistleblowing would be a good thing for business?
I would not recommend to introduce rewards for whistleblowers because it undermines the credibility of the whistleblowing system and you increase the risk that it is misused by people who are not interested in reporting misconduct but interested in earning money from reporting misconduct. And so I think in many companies that would not fit into the company culture.
I wanted to go back to that topic of anonymity and confidentiality because when investigating concerns that a whistleblower might have raised, it can be extremely difficult to keep the identity of the whistleblower anonymous because it may be revealed simply by the fact that certain documents or certain people interviewed know exactly who that person must be by the reason of the issue raised. And I know, Boris, you mentioned to me a very interesting matter in Germany where you had a conflict between the sort of anonymity requirement or confidentiality requirement and then the right to personal data under the General Data Protection Regulation. And I wondered if you might just give us a bit more detail on that.
Yes, there is a new decision of a German regional labor court. And this court says the right to information under the General Data Protection Regulation has priority over the protection of whistleblowers. According to Article 15 of the GDPR, An employee is entitled to information on the data stored about him or her, including the origin of the data. And consequently, this German regional labor court has decided that an employee can request information from an employer even if it reveals the identity of the whistleblower. And this is to apply even if the employer has assured the whistleblower anonymity. And the last word, however, will now be given by the German Federal Labor Court or even by the European Court of Justice.
So we've covered today the scope of the European directive. We've looked at how it might be implemented in Germany and the UK. We've dealt with juicy topics like anonymity and rewarding whistleblowers. And we've covered who will be protected and what kind of complaints they can raise. But I did wonder, Laura, whether you had one last comment that you thought you ought to make around the topics we've been discussing.
I think the future of implementation of whistleblowing regimes in Asia will be very much an issue for the boards and senior management of companies. I think the focus of regulators, as we've seen more recently, is much more around culture and, in particular, really focused on the idea of the tone from the top and how that is then set.
And Boris, do you want to make any reference to a particular issue that you think will be really important going forward?
So my view is that it is regrettable that the directive does not provide for an explicit obligation to use primarily internal reporting channels, because this significantly increases the reputational risk if whistleblowers go externally or even to the media instead of reporting internally first.
Well, thank you both. Really interesting discussion. Definitely will take away that it's tone from the top that is going to be vital in making sure that a speak up culture is promoted. And I would hope that the EU directive is a very positive move for businesses. And as Boris says, should encourage internal reporting first. And it may be that businesses across the world will start to look at the EU directive as a global standard as to how to deal with whistleblowers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.